Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome to the Backstory Podcast. I'm your host, Colby Kolb, and my guest today is a writer, a producer, a dancer, an amazing entertainer, Mr. Neo. What's going on, Neo?
What's going on, man?
Good to see you again.
Good to see you, man.
So before we started this interview, I played for you some calls because I've known you from the beginning of time when you started as an artist. And you used to come on my show when I was in Philadelphia. And, you know, I played these artists, these listeners' calls, and I just watched your face. Like, it was like a whole nother time. Like, can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, take a step back and look at your career to this point, and is it just, how does it feel like to just know all the things that you've done in the last 13 years? And that's just as an artist, you know, a solo artist.
Right. I you know what, man? It's crazy because I never really took the time to step back and look at what I've accomplished, what's happened over the 13, damn near 15 years that I've been doing this. You know, at the time, you know, once the ball started rolling, it was rolling. It was just going. So it was just, all right, cool, we just won a Grammy, on to the next. All right, cool, we just sold many records, on to the next. It wasn't until, like, I think maybe like the fourth or fifth album that I really had a chance to just sit back and go, damn, okay, we really done some things.
Yeah.
Like, we made some stuff happen. Yeah. And then just playing those calls, man. Like, one girl, what kind of jeans she said she was wearing on the
call? She was wearing Rockefeller jeans.
Rockaware jeans.
Rockaware like, jeans, yeah.
Man, that's, yeah, man. But it feels good to know that the love is genuine, the love is real. You know, like, I was talking to somebody the other day about just fanatical fans, you know, chasing you through the mall and all of that. And it's like, I don't have that kind of fan. You know what I mean? My fans are very much, you know, hey, Neo, what's up? Can I get a pic? Snap, and then they go on about their business. You know,
right.
And I think it's a maturity thing at this point. It's a respect thing. You know, 9 times out of 10, if you see me out, I'm with my kids or with my wife, and you know, it's respect. They pay homage and then they get out the way because they know that at the end of the day, I'm still a human being, you know, with a wife and with kids, and I'm a regular person still.
Right.
So I dig that. I will say this, for it to have been this long and for anybody to still give a damn, that's a blessing just within itself. Because you already know, we live in a microwave age.
It's,
you know, they do it for a minute and then they on to the next thing. So for me to still be here, put music together, for people to still be curious as to what I'm doing, like, that's absolute blessing, and I thank God every day, man. Real talk.
So right now, how many albums have you sold? How many records have you sold? Millions. What is the number?
I have no idea.
Really?
I really and genuinely don't. I know it's in the teens, 15, 16, somewhere in there.
Wow.
But I don't know. I kind of stopped paying attention to that part of it, and I'll tell you why. Not you should never ever Don't think that I'm ungrateful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely grateful for every single album sold, to every person that takes their hard earned money and spend it on something of mine. But at the end of the day, I've had people run up on me and say stuff like, "Bro, I was gonna take my life, and one of your songs came on the radio, and I didn't do it." Like, that kind of trumps all of that other stuff. That trumps awards. That trumps record sales. That's touching lives. That's touching souls with music, bro. Like, that's bigger. That's bigger than that. You know, so at that point, I started paying attention to the way that my music was affecting people's lives, as opposed to, you know, how many units we sell this month. Oh, damn. Like, that's not good, because that's not the victory. That's not the success. I mean, again, highly grateful, appreciate the blessing 100%, but I saved a life with a song. Like,
wow. That's heavy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that's deep.
So let's dig a little bit into your history. So you're from Camden, Arkansas. That's where you were born.
Yes, sir.
So you're there, and then you and your family migrate to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So how did you get from Camden, Arkansas to Las Vegas? And what do you remember that transition as a kid?
I do. I remember the culture shock that it was. Because Camden, mind you, people from Arkansas don't know where Camden is.
Right.
Like, it's that small. Right, it's
okay.
Like right outside of Little Rock. It's literally a town. You know what I'm saying? We had one paved road and then a bunch of dirt roads crossing that thing.
Right,
like, that's what Camden was.
Wow.
We got out of there relatively early. I think I was like 9, maybe 10.
So were your parents both from Arkansas?
My mom from Arkansas. My dad's from Nevada.
Okay.
Yeah, and dad, you know, truck driver, met mom on the run, impregnated mom with me. They got married. Then
and you're there. Biracial. Your dad is black and Chinese.
There's some Chinese in there somewhere, man. Yeah. I don't know.
I didn't know that. I was like, yeah, wow, but that's cool, though. I'm biracial, so I always get excited about I love the mixing of the culture. It's just good to, you know, see, you know, because a lot in this world that we live in, people don't understand one another. So it's good to have that understanding and respect.
Bro,
so,
in the grand scheme of all, we all biracial. Ain't nobody in this world pure black, pure white, pure nothing. That don't exist no
more. As a kid, talk to us about the musical part of it. So what were you listening to? What were you loving as a child?
So I gotta say that my mom's musical taste was really, really instrumental in creating my musical taste. Like, my mom was my hero, has been my whole life, still is to this day.
Okay.
So anything she was into, I was into. So when it was Arkansas, it was a lot of soul music, you know, a lot of Teddy Pendergrass and you know, that whole thing. But then when we got to Vegas, and my mom was in and out of these casinos, you know, just doing any job that she could.
Right.
She was bringing home all kinds of different music. Country music. Reba McEntire was one of my favorites back then.
Wow.
Started getting into, like, the big band sound. You know, that's my introduction to the Rat Pack happened in Las Vegas, to the point where I wanted to be Sammy Davis Jr. I was dressing like Sammy Davis Jr. at school, kids looking at me crazy. It was dope. But, well, it wasn't dope. But it was dope to me, but it wasn't dope.
Right.
But, My mom was definitely the one that helped me form my musical taste. And then, you know, once I started trying to sing myself and realized that I didn't sound like the people that she used to love to listen to, it made me hate my singing voice. Like, I didn't want to sing. I my mom could tell that singing gave me joy, but the fact that I couldn't sing like what she loved hurt me. So she introduced me to Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson, you know, kind of a higher tone, higher timbre,
right,
you know, slightly nasally type thing, which is what I had. And she was like, listen to the way that they use their instrument to help you get more comfortable with your own.
Right.
So sure enough, I was a child of Stevie, man. Anything he had done, I was on it. Anything Mike had done, was doing, I was on it. And that kind of created the Neo that you know now.
So did you take music lessons? Did you take classes?
Nah, we ain't have money.
You just naturally figured out. So when did you write your first song?
That I can remember, probably around 11 or 12, that I can remember.
Right.
Mom always tells this story about me being 5 years old and running in the room, making her turn off the TV to listen to this song that I came up with about mustard. I don't remember this.
Right.
We're not going to go
into parents that. Remember everything.
Yeah, of course.
As you will with your kids.
11 or 12 for me, I recall, you know, taking my red notebook, writing a song, singing it back to myself. Satisfaction. I slide a notebook under my bed and go on about my business. Like, initially, it wasn't about trying to get a deal or trying to be famous.
For the love.
Did it because I loved it.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, you were known as, so when you became an artist, your initial name was Go-Go. So tell us a little bit about where did Go-Go come from?
Oh, God. So I was a weird little kid, man. I was definitely a little strange-o. And, there was this cartoon character, Go-Go the Dodo Bird. And my mom actually gave me the name because she just used to call me Dodo Bird all the time. So the name kind of came from her. And then I took it and tried to do something cool with it. And it just was never cool. Mm-hmm. Go-Go is just not a cool name.
So right.
Not a cool name. But yeah, that's where it originated from. And then Neo came years later. Like, Neo was a running joke with a producer friend of mine, Dion Evans, may he rest. He said to me one day, he's like, man, you like the Neo of the music industry. Like, you can do stuff with this music that other people can't do, the way that Neo could do things in the Matrix that other people can't do.
Right, of course.
So yeah, that's how that came together. Never really liked either name.
Right.
But you know, it's one of those things where somebody call you something and then it gets stuck and that's your name. So
So how did you form this group, The Cut? So that was in Vegas, this group that you were in?
Envy. Yeah,
Envy.
Envy was the name of the group. And I can't even take credit for forming the group. I was brought into the group by another one of the members.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, when I was doing music, it was just for me.
Right.
Like, I didn't learn until maybe the 11th grade of high school that I could do this and girls would pay attention that didn't pay attention before and all of that. So, you know, once I learned that, Cass asked me to get in a group. We was moving around Vegas doing talent shows, you know, winning this one, winning that one. We went to MTV's The Cut,
right,
which was at the time hosted by Left Eye from TLC.
Yep.
And, we got to perform on there. We didn't win. We lost to some girl who came out in like a nurse's outfit and then took it off halfway through the performance. And you know,
you wasn't gonna beat that.
Yeah, we wasn't gonna beat
that. Then you were on Showtime at the Apollo though.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Yeah. You went to New York and went to the Apollo Theater.
We did. We did.
How did that go?
Man, it was a lesson in humility. One of the oldest and first rules in this whole thing is remain humble. Remain humble. Don't toot your own horn. Like if it's gonna happen, let somebody else do it. Don't walk around, don't walk around like it don't stink. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we got there and we saw the other people that was performing and we was like, oh man, we got this. We about to smash this, right?
Right.
But there was a few things that worked against us. Okay, so we didn't know that all singers have to use the band. Like, they told us over the phone that we could come with, like, we had a tape of the song we wanted to do.
So you
and
they
was
track?
Like, yeah, bring the tape.
Right.
We got there, and it's like, no, can't use the tape, got to use the band. Ray Chu and the crew. Cool. So I'm like, all right, it's Ray Chu. They know what they're doing. So they learn the song in about 10 minutes, right? Get up on stage. Things just went wrong, bro. Things just went terribly awry.
Did you get pulled off the stage?
We didn't. We got right there. I seen Sandman in the corner, double-dutching. Like, am I going? Am I going?
Because
right. it was like a battle between the people in the audience that didn't like us. It was a lot of them. And the girls in the audience that thought we was cute and was like trying to give us a chance.
Right.
So, more boos than I've ever heard in my entire career.
Was that your first time to New York?
Yes, it was.
So actually, it must have been like, bro, wow, yeah, the energy.
Eyes wide, like, oh my God, we're here.
Right.
I got to touch the log and Kiki Shepherd right there, and Steve Harvey was the host at the time, and it was a moment until we got up there and things just didn't go the way we planned them to go, man. It was bad.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
So you leave the group and then you just pretty much become a writer and a solo artist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, more a writer initially.
Okay.
Like I didn't know how to do this by myself. I had been doing it with the group, you know, from high school on through. So once the group dispersed, I was like, all right, I know it's supposed to be music, but maybe I'm not supposed to be the front man. Maybe I'm not supposed to be that. Maybe it's just writing.
So you focused on writing and then you wrote a song for Marcus Houston.
Marcus Houston's That Girl was one of my first writing credits.
Mm-hmm.
But funny, that came later. That came way later.
So who were some of the people you wrote for in that time before you got to, and I'll get to your big breakout moment, who was the person, who were the artists that you were writing for?
No, initially it was a lot of smaller artists. Like it was groups on like Hollywood Records. That was like Disney's record label.
Right.
It was a group called Youngstown. It was like these three white guys. Shout out to Youngstown, wherever they are on the face of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of ghostwriting for them. I say ghostwriting because nobody knew that I wrote the songs. I didn't get any credit for the songs. I didn't get any money for the songs. I was just doing it because I love to do it, right? But in the process of doing that, so what I would do is I would write and then demo these songs, and then try to move them around. We got looked at by Columbia Records.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first record deal. That was my first solo artist record deal. And
was that at the time when they had signed Alicia Keys too? Because they had signed her like that early before she ended up leaving and going somewhere else.
I think it was right before Alicia Keys. Alicia Keys.
Got it.
Yeah, so we over there, and this is another lesson learned. You know, I didn't know that you could tell these people no. You know, I felt like, all right, I'm in the door. I don't want to do anything to mess this up. So whatever they asked me to do, I was doing.
Right.
No, don't write those songs. Write these songs. No, don't wear that. Wear this. Don't work with those producers. Work with these producers. So album is done. Artwork is done. Everything's finished. And I'm looking at it and I don't recognize myself. I'm like, this ain't me. So I went back in and asked him if I could record some more songs that, you know, leaned a little more towards who I was, and they was like, well, your budget is depleted.
Right. And I'm like, okay. Ah, first lesson in the music business.
Lesson in the music business. Yeah. Hey, if an A&R tells you, hey, let's go to dinner, know that that dinner is on you.
Right.
Just know and understand, you paying for that dinner.
You paying for everything.
All of it, bro.
And the stuff you don't even know about that they charge you.
You have no idea.
It
goes deep. It goes very deep.
The game is hustle. So you're on this label.
Yeah.
You don't like the music that you recorded.
I told them I didn't like it. I told them I didn't want to do it. They shelved me for 2 years.
Wow.
Just sitting on the shelf doing nothing.
Right.
And the funny thing, Marcus Houston's That Girl was going to be my first single.
Okay.
Off of Columbia.
Okay.
But my manager went over there, you know, managers, lawyers worked it out. They released me, but they kept all the music.
Okay.
So mind you, I didn't even know that they sold that song to Marcus Houston. I'm just in the car one day. I think I was headed to work. No, I had to go get a regular job.
Oh, so they don't even have to ask you.
No, not at all.
What about publishing? Did you have publishing?
Not at the time.
So we
had to fight a little later on to get it.
They took the songs you created and then just gave it to Marcus Houston.
Yeah.
Then the song starts to do well,
mm-hmm.
and then people are like, but they give you the credit, though. You had the written credit on
not
it.
Not initially, no.
Oh, you didn't?
No, it's just the producer.
Oh, man. How did that feel to hear his song get out there and you know you wrote it?
It hurt a little bit. It hurt mainly because at the time I didn't dislike the song.
Right.
I disliked the project as a whole, and I was like, I need some more songs that are closer to who I am.
Right.
But because I said that, they took everything away.
Yeah.
Right. So gave that to him. I'm listening. Mind you, they kept my background vocals on the song. So I'm listening to this record. I'm like, okay, that's me, but that ain't me. What the hell? So anyway, long story short, it wasn't no drama towards Marcus. Like, he was just saying
yeah,
song.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, good dude. So that happens. I call a lawyer. You know, I finally get what's mine. But then from there, I'm still at square one. Like, I still don't have a record deal. I still don't have any money.
Now, where were you living at the time?
I was in L.A.
Okay, so you ended up moving to L.A.
In L.A., living in a one bedroom apartment with three other cats that refuse to pick their shoes up at the living room. Just never, ever would.
So you write this song called Let Me Love You.
Yeah,
tell us about that song.
So Let Me Love You, there was a point in time I started dealing with these other cats, and they had connections with Dr. Dre.
Right.
Right. So they took me over to Dre, and I think at the time it was kind of a lightweight competition, because Dre had this other cat that he was going to sign, this other R&B cat. So it was him versus me. So every track that Dre gave me had a song on it already.
Right.
And he was always like, you think you can beat this?
Right.
Think you can beat this?
Right.
All right, cool. So I'm writing. The songs was dope, but old boy was a little more thug than me.
Who was the artist? Was it Danny Boy? Was it a Death Row thing, or was he already in Aftermath?
No, it was Aftermath. It was Aftermath thing at this point. And I think
you can't remember who it is.
I think his name was Governor at the time or something.
Right.
I'm not totally sure.
Right.
But he was dope.
Right.
But he was a little more hood than what I was coming with. So Dre chose him. But Scott Storch was there.
Okay.
And Scott Storch was like, I don't know what Dre talking about. You dope. If you ever in Miami, hit me up.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, we just happened to be in Miami that following week.
Right.
He just happened to be working for Mario that week.
Right.
Rest is history.
And Mario was coming off of his debut project, and he was sort of like this teeny bopper, braid my hair. Like, he didn't, he mm-hmm. was just like, you know, like nobody took him seriously, like, oh my God, you're this great singer.
Right.
And you deliver this gem that blows the socks off. Top 40, urban, everybody loved this song. Mm-hmm. What did that feel like in that moment?
Man, summertime.
Number one record.
The first time I heard the record, I was back in LA after we did it. And it comes on the radio, and I'm like, all right, cool. At this point, I had heard a song of mine on the radio before, so I was excited, but I wasn't like crazy. So played it. DJ stops it in the middle like, yo.
Right.
This, we got to run that back. You ran it
back. Right.
Like, the DJ played the joint like 6 times in a row.
Wow.
Back to back. And I'm like, okay, all right, I think we got something with this.
Right.
And then it starts taking off. And mind you, at this point, I'm still just a writer, you know. I'm still moving around, trying to do my thing. I didn't have a name at the time. I was the dude that wrote the Mario song. That was what everybody was calling me.
So was it under your government name for credits for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. S. Smith. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that song is kind of what helped me get a record deal over at Def Jam. Like, we at that point, I'm like, okay, now I know I'm supposed to be a writer. That's just it. Forget the artist thing. I'm going to just be a writer.
Did you at that point get a publishing deal? Did somebody come to you and say we wanted to do a publishing? Or
nope.
Did you? So you still didn't have a publishing.
Nope.
So you got all the publishing on that song?
Yep.
So what
me and the other writer, I wrote it with one of Scott Storch's writers. So we split it. Yeah.
So what was that first check like from that song?
Woo!
Was that your first big check?
That was my first big check. That's the first time I ever seen that much money in one place at one time.
What did you do?
I went and bought my mom something. I don't remember what it was. It was some little... Like she I remember exactly what it was. She used to love these little, you know, little Fabergé eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went and bought her like 6 of them at one time.
You are hilarious. You and bought your mom like, Fabergé eggs?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because she loved them. I'm like, right, you know, here, ma, these are yours.
Right.
Oh my God, where did these come from?
Like, right. No, not a house, not a car. Nah, Fabergé eggs.
Fabergé eggs. The house and the car came later.
Right.
But initially, right. Fabergé eggs. Mom loves these. Here you go. But yeah.
So it opened your eyes that moment.
To the writing thing. I'm like, this is clearly what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm getting success here. The artist thing didn't work, so here's where I'm supposed to be.
Right.
So, moving around New York, shopping songs. My homeboy Sauce. You remember the group Something for the People?
Yes, of course.
So Sauce is one of the cast from that group.
They were on Warner Brothers.
Yeah, he's currently my vocal producer.
Got arranger, it.
Like, you know.
Yep.
So we moving around New York, just me and him, trying to shop songs. He says, yo, let's stop in here right quick because my homegirl from high school works here.
Okay.
Right? Just happened to be the Def Jam offices.
Okay.
We didn't go in there looking for nothing. We went in there so that he could say hi to
Tina,
her.
Right?
Tina Davis, yeah. Walk in her office. They do the whole reunited thing. He starts playing her music. She's asking who the music is. This is you? Yep. You wrote these? Yep. This you singing? Yep.
Right,
she gets on the phone with L.A. Reid at that same moment.
Right.
All of a sudden... I'm in L.A. Reid's office, him and his tastemakers,
yes,
right?
Yep.
And I'm performing these records.
Yep.
And everybody's giving me the stone face, so I'm like, okay, this is a bust, whatever.
Right.
I didn't come here for this anyway, so I wasn't.
And sure. It was so spur of the moment. You weren't even prepared.
Well, we did not, and it's, I always listen to people tell these stories about how, oh, I did this for a deal, I did that for a deal, and this literally just fell in my lap.
Right.
Like, we went in there, again, just to say hi to her.
Right.
Walked out with a record deal.
Wow. So in that period, though, you were writing songs too, like as you were doing your artist thing, and then you get with a girl named Rihanna.
Yeah, man.
And you deliver, wow, like you deliver some major songs for her. And it was really her big breakthrough moment.
Definitely.
Because she was, you know, she'd had a little success up front, but the songs that you wrote for her, I mean, Unfaithful was one of them, right?
Yeah. Unfaithful. I did a lot of the Good Girl Gone Bad album.
Yep.
We did Hate That I Love You together. We did Take a Bow together.
And that was sort of an introduction for you, at least to the masses, because you were in the video, you were on the song. It was like, hey, I'm Neo, I'm this new guy.
Yeah.
But you were also getting writing credit for it. So
definitely
what did that feel like? Because Rihanna then blew, and these songs that you wrote were big, iconic songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hadn't even come out as an artist yet. Did you ever think in that moment, like, maybe I should just write? Like, I don't even need to be bothered with this artist thing.
I did, but at the same time, I love to sing. I love to perform, and I knew that was never going to go away.
Right.
So I figured if I could get the opportunity to do both, write songs and sing,
right,
why the hell not?
Right.
So that's what I decided to do, and by the grace of God, it worked out, man.
You did Take a Bow too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these are timeless songs. So then you get with, Jay-Z was the president of the label at the time.
Yes.
And then he's like, hey, man, why don't you go, you know, hang out with my girlfriend, Beyonce? And then
I don't know if they was girlfriend, boyfriend right then. I don't know when that relationship
started. Well, they got married in 2006. So the B-Day album.
They got married in 2006?
Yeah, it was 2006 they got married, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
So I was completely oblivious to
all
that.
Yeah, it's either 06, 07, but whatever. They had been dating at that time. But it was the world's best kept secret, though.
I didn't write, so I know the song you're talking about, Irreplaceable.
Right.
I didn't write Irreplaceable for Beyonce.
Right.
I wrote Irreplaceable for me.
Like, really?
That was me and Stargate sitting around messing around. He had this guitar lick that sounded like a country song.
Right.
So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to write a country song.
Right.
So I wrote Irreplaceable. I remember it was a story about one of my aunts and one of the funniest breakups that ever happened in that house.
Okay. Back in Arkansas?
This is in Vegas, actually.
Vegas, okay.
Back in Vegas.
Got it.
And I did it initially with the plans to sing it myself. But I'm listening back to it like, this song going to get me beat up by a lot of women.
Right.
I should probably not sing this song.
Yeah.
So I decided to make it a girl song, shopped it around to a few other female artists. They all turned it down.
Really?
Yeah, man. Finally got to Beyonce. Beyonce understood what it was, and the rest is history.
McDonald's is not new to chicken.
So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Ever notice that saying, no offense, is offensive? Like, no offense, but you're overpaying for your wireless. See? Offensive. No contract plans as low as $35 a month from Straight Talk, all on a 5G network. That's the Straight Talk talking. Straight Talk, available at Walmart and Walmart.com. At 2G speeds, the functionality of some data applications such as streaming video or audio may be affected. Refer to the latest terms and conditions of service at straighttalk.com/support/terms-conditions. A month equals 30 days. 5G access requires a 5G device in a 5G coverage area.
Yeah, and Irreplaceable was bigger than anything. It would Let Me Love You was big, and the Rihanna stuff was big, but Irreplaceable was just a worldwide song. So all of this stuff was a great setup for you. Mm-hmm. By the way, I think one of the most beautiful songs that you ever wrote, ever, out of anything that you ever done, was Flaws and All for Beyonce.
Yeah, man.
That song is just an emotional, like, roller coaster when you, and it's just so authentic.
That's real,
and
that's real. Shout out to raw. Shay Taylor. Shay Taylor produced that. I remember the day we did that. I remember, here's a fun fact about that song. I wrote that song for Britney Spears.
Wow.
That song was supposed to be Britney Spears' song. We had set up all of these sessions with me and Brittany, and she never showed up to any session.
Wow.
So it was like, all right, so we in there, and we just working, making music. Tata, which is Jay-Z's right hand man, he comes in, here's what we doing. He like, hey, let me get that. I'm like, well, I mean, it's supposed to be for Brittany. Let me get that.
Right.
Next thing I know, it's on Beyonce. I had no idea.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, cool. Matter of fact, it's a few songs that was supposed to be Britney Spears that wound up on actually Take a Bow was supposed to be Britney Spears.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In this moment, like before you come out as your own solo artist, you have all this success as a writer. You've got all this energy, right? And you're putting all these records out, and then we come to you finally becoming an artist and doing it yourself. And I remember the first time I heard you, we paid more attention to it because you had a Philadelphia rapper on the song, Stay.
Yeah, shout out to Petey Crack, man.
Yeah, Petey was a Philly guy. So we played it in Philly because that was our guy, and we were thinking he was the next in the rock to ascend. And Stay was just an awesome introduction for you. It was just a really cool song. Yeah, it painted the picture and set the tone for your album.
It's fun. It's energy.
And then you dropped this debut album. Mm-hmm. And then what was that next single?
So Sick came right after.
Right, Stay. So Sick. And then that was a monster record.
And that was all she wrote.
Yeah.
And mind you, this is when I learned the genius of L.A. Reid, because L.A. Reid called it like he knew the future. He was like, so here's what's going to happen. We're going to put out this one first.
Yep.
It's going to be introductory. Okay. It's going to do well. It's not going to blow you out of the water, but it's going to do just well enough to get everybody going. All right. Who's that guy?
Yeah.
And then we hit him with So Sick, and that's going to take it there. And I'm like, I'm sitting in the chair like, all right, bro, if you say so.
And then
sure enough,
it happened exactly that way. Yeah. Sexy Love, too, was like, you know, I mean, it was just a monster debut project.
Yeah, man.
And then you come with another big project. Like, then you just went on a roll for, like, three albums, multi-platinum, back to back. What was that like? Like, because you had written for artists that had that success, but now you're having that success. Where was your head in that moment?
In the clouds, bro. Like, again, like I said when we first started, once the ball started rolling, there was no, let's sit back and enjoy this. It was just, let's go.
Right.
You know, I learned on the road that my debut album had reached 3 million copies.
Wow.
I learned that in the process of moving on to another show, in the process of, you know, I won my Grammys in transit. You know what I mean? Everything was, all right, that happened, next. All right, that happened, next. All right, that happened, next. And, like, I didn't know that I didn't know that I could sit, that I could go, wait, hold on, let's slow down and like look at this. Like this is what I've been dreaming about. This is what I've always wanted. At that point, it was just go. Just keep going.
And then you get with Pitbull and you make anthems.
Mm-hmm.
Anthems that, like, there's one thing to make a song, like a good R&B song, but when you make a good pop anthem, it never dies. Like, for the rest of your life, bro, you're going to be somewhere with your kid and the song's going to come on. Like, mm-hmm. What does it feel like to make one of those big-ass records?
Again, in the moment, didn't know that it was gonna do that, like, right. So.
And Pitbull wasn't even that kind of artist yet. Like you helped catapult him to that kind of artist.
Yeah, he was moving in that direction, and so I met him, I think at a party or an award show or something. He was like, "Man, we got to work." I'm like, "Bro, call me, let me know."
Right.
So you know, we exchanged info. He sent me the track. And on the track, all that was on the track was the girl part.
Right.
So I just wrote around that, sent it back to him. He put his thing on it.
Wow.
Just took the hell out. And mind you, I liked it when I was done with it, but I didn't know it was gonna do that.
Right.
Like, I had no idea. That song to this day, like I perform that record and people lose their damn mind.
So one story I want you to share, because I always remember it because we did a lot of interviews. Talk to us about Michael Jackson calling you and singing your song to you. You told me that story, and I just can't even imagine, based on with the story you just told about your mom, mm-hmm. right, and how she raised you, and she turned you on to Michael and Stevie Wonder.
Yes, indeed.
You get a phone call from Michael Jackson, and he is singing to you. What was the song he sang to you?
Let's backtrack a little bit.
Okay.
So the initial phone call, he called my cell phone, right,
mm-hmm.
and the call went a little something like, "Hey, how you doing? Hey, hello, how you doing? Who's this? It's Mike." "Mike who?" "Michael Jackson." All
right,
click,
right.
And I hung up. Right. I'm like somebody playing on my damn phone,
right,
whatever.
Right.
So right after that, I get a text from my assistant like, "Yo, you're not going to believe this, but Michael Jackson is about to call you." And oh my God, I just hung up on Michael Jackson. I just hung up on my, so he called back. I lied. I'm like, "Hey man, sorry, I was going under a bridge, connection. What's going on?"
Right.
So he starts talking to me about music, telling me that he likes what I do.
Right.
But the whole time I'm like, I don't know how I didn't crash the car, because
I was driving,
and I'm like, I'm in a dream right now. Like, right. Michael Jackson is telling me that he likes my music and wants to work with me. Somebody hit me with something so I can wake up. This is crazy, right?
Right.
So we set up the meeting. He was like, "Well, I'll be in New York on this day at this time, whatever, whatever."
Right.
We met at Leo Cohen's house.
Wow.
He didn't want to go anywhere public.
Got it.
All right, cool. Uh-huh. So we get to Leo Cohen's house. I'm sitting in the room. I'm waiting on him walking. He walks in, black suit. He had the I think he had hurt his thumb or something, so he had like a cast on his arm.
Mm-hmm.
Big aviator mirror sunglasses, like the ones that the bike cops wear.
Yeah,
motorcycle cops wear. And he walks in, and I extend my hand, and he says to me, but he doesn't even grab my hand. He says, "You know what my favorite song of yours is? Please don't worry about me. I'm fine." Bro, I almost lost it.
Wow.
I almost lost it right in that moment. I had to maintain because I'm like, I'm a G. Let me chill. But in my mind and in my heart, I was a 6-year-old girl. Right?
It was
ridiculous.
That's a great. It's always, to me, it was always a great story, and I just couldn't imagine that moment. Well, Neil, thank you for your time, man. It's always good to see you.
Appreciate the love, man,
this is just it's an awesome career, and you're about to drop a brand new album. And
I'm doing a Christmas album this year. People, you know, for the last 4 years, people have been on my back like, "Why don't you do a Christmas album?" So I finally went and did one, but I wanted to do something a little different. It's called Another Kind of Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and it's slightly different. It's something that I wanted to do, the kind of Christmas music that you could rock with all year long if you felt like it. You know what I mean? So
Went
out to Jamaica for about 2 weeks, which is just comedy within itself. I went to Jamaica to record a Christmas album. That's funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, album is done. Be looking for it relatively soon. I don't know. When I put it out, I love social media. When I put it out, I want y'all to hit me and let me know what y'all feel about it. Like if I hit the mark. If this is the kind of Christmas album that you would listen to in July.
Thank you, Neo. Before we close out this episode of the Backstory Podcast, I love to kind of dig in the crates and share some content from way, 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 way back. And I'm going to share some phone calls that Neo took with listeners when he first came out in early in his career. And you can kind of
see the connection he had with the audience, and it's a pretty cool moment with Neo. Check it out.
Hi, Neo.
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I can't wait to see you tonight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be live.
Yes, it will be.
You coming all the way from A-Town to come see Neo tonight?
Yes, I am. I'm driving as we speak.
What you wearing?
Well, I'm wearing Rockaway pants with a mustard shirt with mustard boots.
What color is the Rockaway pants?
Coordination.
It's blue.
Okay,
blue
so you
jeans.
Blue and mustard.
Yes.
We're going to be finding you tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to look for you.
You better.
Let me ask you, what's your all-time favorite Neo song?
Sexy Love.
Ooh, that's a great one. All right, we're going to put that down as your vote. Thanks for your call, all right?
Thank you.
Let's go to Camden. We got Lorraine on the line. You're on with Neo.
Hey, Neo.
Hey, what's up?
What you doing?
Chilling. I'm on the radio.
Oh, can you sing Make It Work to me? That's my song.
Is that your all-time favorite Neo song?
Yes.
Cool.
That is my song. My baby dad dedicated that to me, so I love that song.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
You be looking so good on the videos, Neo. I love you.
You coming
Thank
to the show
you,
tonight?
I appreciate it.
No, I don't got no tickets.
Oh, well, keep listening. Neo's going to give away a pair of tickets soon, okay?
Okay, I keep calling.
All right, Mama, let's go to Desiree in West Philly. You on with Neo?
Oh, my gosh, is this really Neo?
Yes, it is. How you doing?
Fine.
What's going on with you?
Nothing. Oh, my gosh. I love you.
Thank you, baby. I appreciate that.
What's your all-time favorite Neo song?
Stay With Me and okay. Mirror.
Wow.
She said Stay With Me and Mirror.
Wow.
She went back to the first record.
A lot of people
record.
Love that Mirror,
that's
man.
That's a real fan right there. She went back to the first record. All right.
Yes,
appreciate
Mirror,
it,
that
mama.
Was, that's all I played.
That's what's up, baby. I appreciate that.
You coming to the show tonight?
No, I didn't get no tickets, and I've been trying to win all day.
Keep listening, mama. Don't give up hope.
What you got to say to Neo?
That I love you, and I wish I could be at the concert tonight. I'm going to keep trying.
All right, well, we got some more tickets coming up, all right?
Okay.
All right, let's go to North Philly. We got Tave on the line. You on with Neo?
Hi, Neo. How you doing?
I'm good. What's going on with you?
Nothing. Oh, my goodness, man. I wish I could come to your concert tonight.
You got
to
keep listening, Mama. I'm going to get some tickets away later on.
Neo, I really love you. I swear, you is the hottest thing out right now. I'm telling you right now, R&B singer is Neo. My favorite song by you is Sexy Love. I love that song since the first day it came out. I listen to it every morning before I go to school. That's what keeps me motivated.
That's
listening
what's
to
up.
My Neo.
Thank you, baby.
I'm telling you the truth.
That's two votes so far for Sexy Love.
Two votes for Sexy Love.
Yeah, so we got to find out the most requested Neo song of the hour that we can play at the top of the hour,
these
voted
know
on
what
by you.
Talking about, man. They know what they're talking about.
Can I tell you something?
What's up, baby?
I love you.
I love you too.
Oh, thank you.
Take care, baby.
All right.
Coming up on the next Backstory Podcast, producer, DJ, label executive, and one of the founders of Heavy D and the Boys, DJ Eddie F.
Andre started, he was like a big brother slash father to us. I just always was a company guy. So at some point, you know, there was a little rift between Guy and Andre, and Guy wanted to get off the label. And I remember feeling like I didn't produce R&B records at the time. I was just doing rap. That's kind of what pushed me into doing R&B, because I just felt like, you know, I got to help, like, you know, however I can. Like, I can't let the ship go down.
The Backstory Podcast with Kobe Kolb is an Urban One Incorporated Reach Media Pod is Good production, hosted and executive produced by yours truly, Kobe Kolb, edited by Donkus. Follow us on Twitter at BackstoryPCC, on Instagram, Get the Backstory. For sales and corporate partnerships, Josh Romani and Michelle Marino. Digital marketing, Walter Gaynor, J.R. Smith, and Tim Hall. Thanks again for listening to the Backstory Podcast.